Joining us on the line now is Mitzi Sereto. She's an American-British author, anthology editor and short story writer whose work spans multiple genres. She's back with us on The Book Show to talk about her latest publication called Women Who Murder, an international collection of deadly true crime tales. Following on the success of her popular The Best New True Crime Stories franchise, Women Who Murder contains true crime cases about female killers from around the world. Welcome to The Book Show, Mitzi.
Thank you, Hannah. It's nice to speak with you again.
Oh, it's nice to have you back with us. So true crime has really taken off, hasn't it? It's a huge genre now. People really, really fascinated by this.
Yes, it certainly does seem to be popular, and I've kind of been on a nonstop roll with it since probably about a year before COVID. So it's been endless for me, and I've been immersed in true crime for pretty much full time now.
It must be fascinating looking into all these people and stories, and shocking as well, I guess.
Yes, and let's put it this way, you never run out of content as long as you don't run out of people.
And there is something I think more shocking about women who murder compared to men. I don't know why that is. I suppose women generally are seen as a bit more placid, more motherly figures, I suppose.
Well, I guess the cliches still ring true about the so-called gentle sex, but it in a way, it's a bit of a double standard. I mean, you've got, let's face it, we all know statistically males commit more crimes, especially more violent crimes. And somehow when we see cases of women who do it, people tend to get a bit more, take a step back and find it more shocking and sometimes even more objectionable, which sounds a bit ridiculous, but I think we've seen that time and time again in the media portrayals of a lot of, women perpetrators.
Mm. And is there something generally very different, very kind of obvious that shows that a crime or a murder has been committed by a woman compared to a man, or not necessarily?
Not necessarily, because for instance, a lot of the cases in the Women Who Murder book, some of these cases, the killings are quite violent and quite brutal. And I think in the past, it was assumed that women's weapon of choice was poison. And that hasn't changed. And of course, we still see that. But, the nonviolent methods like poison, for instance, which obviously, it's not a violent thing for the woman to poison someone. The person who's the recipient of the poison may think differently. But, they're not afraid to take up arms and get quite physical in offing someone.
Mm. So let's talk about some of the women in the book. You've written a story about Iran's first known female serial killer.
Yes, I'm never one to shy away from a challenge, and I wanted to find something a little bit different, and I was very fortunate to have just randomly stumbled on this case. And, again, Iran's a country where you don't tend to think there's serial killers running around, particularly female serial killers, but they do exist. Perhaps they're not as widely reported on as, say, serial killers from the States or from the UK. But it was a fascinating case to explore. And I actually titled the story Mahin, Monster or Victim. And I put forth an argument in both cases, both the way the crimes were committed, and they went progressively more violent. To the background of Mahin and why she ended up where she was, and to perhaps put forth some type of portrayal that would show her that there could have been extenuating circumstances here, and that she was driven by desperation. And ultimately, it's up to the reader to decide if she was indeed a monster or a victim.
Yeah, that's always the interesting thing, isn't it? The psychology behind the person who's committed these crimes, trying to work out why and what their background is, and, really trying to understand what's gone on inside their heads.
Well, I think that's why true crime is so fascinating. In the past, true crime had a bit of a bad reputation, a bit exploitive and sensationalist. And that's something that I've been very much not wanting to do with all of my true crime books. I feel really responsible in having these stories told, and I instill that responsibility in anyone who submits a story to me. We're talking about human beings, be it the victims, obviously, but also the perpetrators, and readers are interested in wanting to know what's behind these people, why they may have done something. Occasionally there is no feasible reason. We can't actually even understand why they did it. Sometimes there are people that are just evil. But in other cases, we see how progressively, maybe from childhood onward, or something happened in their life, or a switch was flipped, and what drove somebody to commit crimes like this that the average person just can't even conceive of doing.
Yeah. I mean, again, there's a difference, not always, but a lot of the time, a huge difference between someone who's committed a murder, you know, done it once, and someone who's gone on to do it multiple times. You know, not that obviously once is okay at all, but there are arguments for defense when people have done it once, you know, that idea of a switch being flicked, and people trying to get away with it, a huge mistake having done it once. But when it's multiple times, there's no escaping it, is there?
No, it's a little hard to explain away a successive body count. Yeah, exactly. I mean, that one time, you know, I suppose we can all put ourselves in their shoes. Rage, jealousy, fear, many emotions can drive someone to actually kill someone. One would hope that if it did happen, that it was a one-off. But when it's a successive thing, and you become a career killer, that's a completely different thing. And in the book, we have a selection of both sides of that coin, career killers, so to speak, and someone who just whatever happened, and it just happened. You know, yeah. Domestic abuse, that sort of thing.
And when people do kill multiple times, it's often that they're, or so it seems, please correct me if I'm wrong, you'll know a lot more about it than I do, but it often seems that they're really kind of not right in the head, that they've got deep-rooted issues, they're obsessive, they've really got a lot going on in their heads.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, people who commit multiple murders, there's just... in a way it becomes a sport for them, and they just have they're fixated perhaps on a specific type. We have a serial killer in the book who wasn't necessarily doing it just as a shall we say sport. I don't want to lessen what the impact of these crimes are, but serial killing is almost like a criminal sport to some of these people. But we have a woman in here who basically serial killer, she becomes a serial killer for greed. You know, she just starts killing off all her relatives for money and power and prestige.
Wow.
Yeah. And the body count just keeps racking up.
Gosh, it's unbelievable, isn't it? It's weird to think that some people can kill so easily, you know, to not think about who the person is, what family they're leaving behind, how many other people's lives it's destroying. You know, you see it a lot with gangs, you know, gang killings where it's kind of tit for tat and they just keep going. It's, well, you killed my brother. Well, you killed my father. Well, you killed my uncle. And it just goes on and on and on. And there's just no remorse. They don't care. It's like they're not dealing with bodies and humans.
No, I mean, it's as if they have no humanity at all. They may have started out perhaps ambiguous about it, but then, yeah, I think in a way they might become sort of immune to what they're actually doing and can completely remove themselves. And it becomes just, like you get up in the morning and drive to work every day, to them that's sort of what it is.
Yeah, for sure. So the case of the killer in Iran, when did this happen?
This happened in the early 2000s. And again, this it was an interesting thing because there was a killing and then there was a break of about maybe three or 5 years. I can't remember offhand. And the killings, the initial killing, didn't seem to connect with the later killings. The first one, from all intents and purposes, it seems to me was done in a way of self-defense and lashing out and just, again, that switch being flipped. And then later on, it became the desperation, a financial desperation, and every other kind of desperation you could name sort of triggered it. And the perpetrator in this wasn't even sure she would kill and was still ambiguous about doing it. And then it was that, you know, the same thing we'd all be faced with. Oh my God, this person could identify me. What do I do? And that started it. Mm. And it just progressed and progressed and to the final killing, which was the most brutal and violent and the most removed, where in a way she actually seems to have shut down her humanity and looked upon it as a job.
Gosh. Yes.
Her motivation was financial. I mean, she was stealing gold jewelry from her victims because she needed money desperately.
Mm. Yeah, it's interesting, the idea of killing someone to protect yourself, you know, killing someone because maybe they know something about you that you don't want to get out or that kind of thing. When people feel the need to do it just to protect themselves, as opposed to wanting to kill the person because they don't want them around, kind of thing. That's a different thing as well, isn't it?
Yes, yes, yes. Although I think probably a lot of people could identify with the not wanting someone around piece.
Yeah. So tell us about some of the other women featured in the book.
As I said, you know, the book is international, and that has been my thing since I started this. I very, very much like to have a global perspective. And, you know, one of the reasons for that is, especially in the States, I think a lot of readers just figure it's all going to be American cases. And I don't want to do that. I actually told people, look, don't send me any more American cases. we travel the world in this book, as you referenced my stories from Iran, but we have other than stories from the UK and the US, we have Canada, we have Australia, we have Malaysia, we have India, I don't know if I left anyone out, Germany. And for instance, we've got some cases that are sort of written from the first person. One of the stories is by Mike Brown, who's a Canadian author and podcaster. And he wrote about a terrible case that happened in his hometown in Nova Scotia, Canada, of a young girl who was found murdered. And it turns out that her mother was the person who killed her. And so it's a sort of a reflective piece. You know, I enjoy that if somebody can actually put themselves in the story or has a personal connection. We have another one that was in South Carolina. Again, this was also about a woman who ultimately was found guilty of killing her two children. I don't know how wide known this one is internationally, but the woman who drove her car into a lake and let her little boys drown. Mm-hmm. The author for this one, Kathy Pickens, was actually in the courtroom and had watched the court case and observed everything. So she had that whole firsthand experience and described everything, not just the trial, but how the local people reacted. It was a small, small town in South Carolina, you know, where everybody pretty much knew everyone. And so you've got like a bird's eye view and a real cultural lens put on the case.
Yeah.
And we've got the case from Australia about Kelly Lane and the mysterious child that just seems that she gave birth to and just it vanished after that. And it's still all ambiguous. She's imprisoned, but it's still a lot of questions behind that case. We have a Malaysian story from a writer who is a Malaysian writer who lives in New Zealand. And she wrote about a political killing, a murder, a sort of a ritualistic witchcraft type of murder of a political figure. And one of the perpetrators was a would-be pop star, failed pop star. And then she just, it's totally a bizarre case. Whole thing was just a strange one. Again, when you deal with witchcraft in the modern day, you know, modern day life, not something that's common. We've got a story from Wales about the woman who set fire to the pushchair and ultimately resulted in the deaths of several people, including children. And what else do we have? We have one case that I think would probably be the most identifiable for people is a historical piece from Ontario, Canada, about an Italian immigrant woman who is driven to the brink by her husband, who is horribly abusive. And she ultimately just kills him because, you know, in self-defense, and she just can't take it anymore. And how society was in that time about this kind of killing of a woman killing her husband, and how she was looked upon in the media, and the international firestorm that resulted, and the women's movement who got behind her too, because it's, you know, we hear about these cases all the time, you know, domestic abuse and domestic violence, and the victim lashing out because maybe she feels she has no other option.
Yeah, definitely. I find it amazing how you can read all these stories and be immersed in all these true crime stories, and you're able to distance yourself and not be like massively affected by it all. Or do you have moments where you just kind of cry and go, this is awful? I mean, you know, we're talking, as I say, real people, real families here. I mean, some of these stories are so upsetting.
Yeah, well, you know, in my case, I sort of have to remove myself from the content, because obviously I want to put out the best book that I can, and both with my own story and working with the other writers closely. So, yeah, I have to remove myself and you know, sort of just put on my writing and editing hat. But some of the things are just beggar's belief. You know, you just can't believe these actually happened, or that someone went to these extremes. You know, one of the cases in the book is the one from Australia, where the woman kills her partner and essentially decides to, you know, I mean, she doesn't just kill him. She slaughters him. And let's just say there's a cooking pot involved. It's a very famous story. But when the person who wanted to write about it contacted me, I said, well, okay, you need to put a different perspective on this, because if people know the case, we need to give some fresh outlook and some insight into it. So it may be familiar to people, but when they read it, they'll get a completely new outlook on it as far as domestic abuse, and that it's not just something that happens to women. So, yeah. You know, I like to try to have some stories that will enlighten people and get them to think and broaden their knowledge, not just maybe just, you know, give them their true crime thrills, you know.
Yeah, definitely. Well, if people want to get a copy of the book, it's called Women Who Murder, an international collection of deadly true crime tales. And it's by Mitzi Soretto, who we've been chatting with today. Mitzi, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Hannah. It was great speaking with you.